codified to go to the convent. And in the old convent, as you stepped in towards the kitchen area, there was an ironing room, and the kitchen was kind of behind it. After Mass, she called one person and asked them to call, get word to everybody after whatever Mass they were at, to stop at the convent and step into the ironing room and pick up their diploma. That's what we did. We picked up our diploma off of the ironing room in the sister's kitchen. But every one of us, every one, got a secretarial vote. Johnny Uhar became even the president of the West Penn Power, West Penn Iron, I think it was, over in Brackenridge, one of those places across the river. He went up to even the president of that company there in that area. And as I say, it, to me, it was teacher that made us want to do what we had. And my brother Joseph, when he finished the 8th grade, they gave him a big certificate. Joseph Andrew Benoni. My mother had the two of us in the stand back and said, boy, isn't that a pretty one? Joseph Andrew Benoni. Look at the other one. You can hardly see the name written on it. I must have teased him. But that was my school years. So I went to work as a secretary. First of all, I went working as a clerk in Hart's, and the secretary was putting Mr. Hart put me up in the bookkeeping department. I had an offer going into a real estate company. I went in there, and that day and age, we were making good money, kid. We were making $12 a week.
For how many hours?
8 hours.
8 hours a day.
You never got a dollar. And of course, things weren't as expensive as they are today either, needless to say. And
it was good money then.
That was, yes. Mm-hmm. And then from there, the man said he knew that they weren't, because Mr. Forbes and Benzema, they were in business together and they were having trouble. They bought a lot of property out in the 7th Street area and had it laid out in lots and so on. So about a month before I entered, I knew that they were going to break up the and I went to work in the office department of Lorch's. They had a store. There was a Lorch company on the south side for a long time. And they had a department store there in New Kensington. I worked up in the office. Mm-hmm. Cashier would set up the amount of money that the things were, and the girls sent up their sales slips with it, and you didn't make the change up in the office, and I worked there for a month before I had.
Did they use that, the thing that you sent the change down? What kind of thing did you send it down?
At that time, sister, in that place, now some of the places, even places that were in before that, they had like an empty pipe, and they mm-hmm. had a thing like almost like a, or the old-fashioned films that you used to put in cameras, about that long, and it had a screw top on it. Mm-hmm. And they would send up the money and the bill of the goods, and you made the change and put the change back in that and send it down on another thing. Mm-hmm. You could see them moving through, and that's what Lorch's had. We did the same
thing.
Yes, uh-huh. Yes. You didn't have it in there. It was all in on a gallery area. Now, I don't know about the big Pittsburgh stores, but they had it, too.
They were.
But I didn't know whether they had one on every floor or whether they had a big central place to send it. But that's what they did, whatever it was.
Someone told me that's similar to the drive-in banks today.
Yes.
It comes up in this little jar, and you take the top off and put your transaction in. So
you can see it going along the pipes.
You could see it going, you know. If it was the exact amount that still went up there, then you marked the slip paid and sent it back down. Mm-hmm. That if they would be stopped at the door by the guard or something like that, they'd have the slip that they paid for. Mm-hmm.
How were your opening days in the community system?
Well,
beginning days.
December 8th, 1900, before I entered. The snow got so deep before we got here, we didn't know whether we were going to get here or not. My mother and Miss Healy drove us here. Gander, or, let's see, I think it was 70%, I think. Let me think first. Mm-hmm. My sister, Leona, came first, but to her, at that time, you were placed in the rank in the community according to your application, not according to the time. Mm-hmm. Later, it changed to when you walked into the house. Mm-hmm. And it had been that before that, till then it came later. Mm-hmm. And Sister Leona, Sister Mercedes, Sister Kinesis, not Mary, Sister Kinesis, Sister Esther, this is going backwards, Sister Niles, Sister Estelle, Sister St. John, Sister Stanislaus, Sister Marie Therese, Catherine Marie, she was an L associate, but she took Catherine as her name. Margaret Devine, Augustine, Corona. There were 14 in our group.
Is that unusual to have that name?
At that time, I think it's not. But it was about average, I would say. And we got the habit. Now, even the ones that entered in September, so there were different dates in September. Leona came in on the 6th of December. Some of us came in on the 8th of December. Sister Kinesis came back in on the 1st of January, and Sister Esther came in on the 3rd of January. And we all got the habit April 14th. We got a dispensation to give the habit. They needed sisters to put out in the schools, so they got the habit in less than 6 months. We were thrown together September to January, the people that entered. And we lost four. I mean, three did. Mercedes, we don't know if it is.
You mean you lost four? You mean four left the community?
They four left the community. Well, one was sent, but it was me. Oh, Sister St. Julie. She was from Fairport. She was from St. Through a misunderstanding.
Did you make your year immediately after?
No, Sister, we went out and taught a year, then came back and made your year.
Mm-hmm.
Then you made your first vows. My first mission was Bellevue. And we did that. So about 2 years later. It's the only mission. If Mother told me today to go there, I'd say, Mother, I can't do it. She'd say, well, then go home. I'd go home. That sounds terrible, isn't it? But my 2 different years there, I'm telling you, I knew. And talk about your occupations we had.
You mean in the parish or in the home?
Children in school. The one class I had, fourth grade, I had them for 2 months, and I was losing weight like nobody's business. And Sister Rosario and I occupied the same cell. Well, I had to get into bed first because Rosario slept on the bed on the outside, and I had to crawl over her bed to get in my bed. And Sister Martinez, she said, hey, kid, she always called me the kid, Charlie, you're getting as skinny as the dickens. So Sister Rosario went to her and told her that I wasn't sleeping. So she sent for me. And I told her. I don't think she believed me. Until one day, she went over to school at noon early. She heard this running around. The church was up on the top floor of the school building. She went up, and the whole gang of fourth graders were jumping over the pews, over the railing, and lighting candles. So when she rang the bell, she said, I'm coming down to your room. I said, all right, sister. She came in. And she whipped every girl in that punch. And then I had a hold of him. And I whipped every boy in the class while she had him. My sister Assunta had a third grade. She had 54, I think. So she went to sister. She said, "Sister, I'm seasoned to a great extent in the classroom." And she said, "They are something else." She said, "I'd be glad to change classes." She said, "At least have experience of a couple years in school." I think Sister Assunta was in there 1 week. She says to me, "Sister, how did you ever put up with it?" And years later, I went back there. And I'm telling you, that one class, we did departmental work in 2 7s and 2 8s. I taught arithmetic in all 4 classes. And I taught CSL in 2 8s. Then I forgot what the other sisters had in the 2 classes. There were some lovely children in that group. But the one boy, he had a gorgeous voice, and the choir master really made him think he was the Lord himself. And he said to me this one day, I had said to his sister that was in there, she had been down in second grade, and she said, "Sister, if you see me doing that anything that is out of line with older students, I would appreciate it." And I said, "Sister, I said, remember, you are asking me." And I said, "I don't think there'll be any need of it, but I said, just remember you're asking me." The pastor had a ruling. No child was to go in that school before the bell rang unless it was raining. And that he wanted to see every sister going into that school. At least 15 minutes before the bell rings, shine or anything else. On rainy days, I went through over there earlier. Well, I know he was sitting behind the curtains watching. But anyhow, so this one day, I taught the CSL and the 2 8s, as I said. And I went in, and he wasn't paying attention at all. And I asked him to read something. He said, "What page are you on?" And I said, "Well, just put the book up on the desk, will you?" Came up. He said, "What do you want with it?" I said, "Put it on the desk." He turned to the class and said, "Isn't she funny? It's true as I'm sitting here, sisters." I said nothing. So in exchanging classes, I said to the sister who was coming in, I said, "Sister, you'll find a CSL book on your desk. If it's not in your way, will you please leave it there?" I said, "If it's going to be in your way, I will take it." She said, "It won't be in my way." I said, "Okay." So the next morning, I went over for a visit. Hey, look, see, she gave it to me. Why aren't you nice like she is? Never pretended I heard. And in the 2 8th grades, there were twin girls, but the one girl that was in my report group was a little slower, and the parents had asked when there were 2 grades not to put them together because it reflected on her. And her sister was in the 7th or 8th grade. Okay, so I went to the principal. She's going to consults. I spoke to her about that. She said, "Well, not much I can do." So anyhow, one day this boy's mother, he had a gorgeous voice, and the choir master, he really made the boy like what I think. He made him think he was a little boy. And my one job Friday was to be in this church for choir practice after dinner. And no one else was to be there but the choir master and myself. And as I say, the pastor said, "I want no sister talking to any parent during school hours whatsoever. If they call, you tell them to meet you at the conference." This is the first Friday we were in school. So I was in for choir practice this day at the church, and it was snowing a little bit. And during the choir practice, I saw this door opening, and a woman's face opening, and then it was all, no, this one opened, who would open? I thought, who is that? She wants to come in, she should go to the bathroom, come in from the back, main entrance. When I stepped out, it was this boy that the choir master had really made him think he was a little god, really. And she said, I want to talk to you. And I said, I'm sorry, but we are not permitted to take time from the classes. I'm walking with the children. She said, see, you're a big coward. This is in presence of children. Never answered. Kept on going. She walked over. And I knew Father was behind the window, the curtain watching. So I went to Sister that evening after school, and I told her about it. She said to me, well, isn't it strange she didn't come to me? And I said, well, I don't know anything about that, Sister. But I said, I know Father Hinnebush was sitting in behind the curtains watching. So I said, I just want you to know. I said, I just said to her, we are not permitted to take time from the classes. And I said, that's all I said to her. I said, but she kept ballywagging at me from this church door to the school door. And this one day, this sister had me, as I say, this gang of kids were hanging out with her, and this was what I said. So since she had asked me if I would tell her, I went to her privately, and I said, Sister, you remember, I said, you asked me. And I said, you know the Father has stated that he wants no child in this building before the bell rings. And I said, when I went to your classroom this morning to speak to you about something, I said, they were actually hanging on their neck. And I said, this is not school policy, Sister. Well, she had taught second grade before that. Now, you can do that with small children. So she turned to me. She said, would you like to mind your own business? I said, yes, remember, you asked. She's no longer in the school. Asked me for it. And as I say, that all, and when I went back this last that time, and as I say, my first year's experience here. But in that fourth grade, there was at least 12 children who had been picked up down on the main street for stealing. So that's why I don't like Bellevue. As far as the house was concerned, it was pleasant. But that's not your life. It's dealing with children. And when you know you don't have the support that you need from those in charge of the school or from the parents themselves, and I'm not saying that any teacher is always right. I've made my mistakes. I've made mistakes in school, and I know there have been times that unjustly I corrected a child, which I apologize for, because we were trained at home that way. And it was no credit due to me, it was credit due to my mother and father, the way they brought us up. For instance, if we would snap at each other in the house about something, because somebody asked us something we didn't know, we were corrected for it. And as I say, that's the only mission. If the Mother Superior sent for me today and say, Sister Sienna, I'm going to go you to go to Bellevue, I'd say, Mother, I'm sorry, but I can't go. She'd say, you're under obedience. I'd say, I'm sorry. But in conscience, I can't go there. And I couldn't. There's no reflection upon everybody. But that very first year you were in a school to meet with a group. Mm-hmm. And a sister sometimes said to me one day, she said, Sister, how did you take what you took? She said, I'm a seasoned teacher. And as I say, I love school. Taking out of that and put into CCCD work. If I had my choice, I'd do CCD work all the time.
You got to like that then?
Oh, sister, we handled over 1,200 pupils in a week in Leechburg. And they were from five parishes. Now, some of those were from St. Gertrude's Parish in Vandergrift. We were not responsible, but the priest agreed that they could come to our place, especially the high school students, because they had bus transportation to the Kiske area high school. And children that, some of our children that belonged to, say, like St. Martha's, because they wanted to belong to a national parish, those children were still sent to our place. So we had the five parishes went together to pay the salaries and to maintain the buses that brought the children from those public schools to the center, to our different places we taught. Up until we got the center, we taught in garages, we taught in kitchens, we taught in basements. But after we got the center, we had eight beautiful, large classrooms. A very, very large kitchen, a big library, two offices, and there, because we handle over 1,200 pupils.
And were some of those nationality parishes?
Yes.
Which ones?
Practically all. St. Catherine is more of a mixture. St. Martha's was principally Slovak, Assumption, principally Hungarian. And out at Hyde Park, it was a grand mixture of different nationalities. Mm-hmm. St. Martha's and the other ones were more, but all different nationalities were in every parish.
What kind of work did the people do mainly there?
Where?
In Leechburg.
They worked in the mill. Jones and Watkins Steels over in West Leechburg. Mm-hmm. Or is it Allegheny? I don't know which one it is now. It's a steel mill over there. And that's where most of them work. Some worked in mines out in places.
Did you do any type of social work while you were doing the catechetic work system?
You mean visiting people?
Yes.
Oh, yes, we visited the sick.
Uh-huh.
Yes. Uh-huh. And then the sister, and when Sister Rose Angela was there, and when Sister Mary Conrad was there, they were the superiors, and they had the leader course. They trained future teachers, and a priest taught the doctrine for those future teachers, even though they were teaching at the same time they were taking these courses. And then my 1 year there, I took some of them to teach the methods, just the one last year I was there.
How many years were you there, sister?
I was there seven.
Seven years.
I love the book.
Is Sister Sylvester with you, Sister? Sister Sylvester?
No. The only one I have is Sister Rose Angela Superior and then Sister Mary Conrad. Mary Conrad was there for 3 years, I think. She came from the Matron Mines. Last year up there, Sister Mary Irene and Madeline and myself, and the three of us lived over in Freeport, because the priests had them. They wanted to renovate the present convent we were in. They went to the Bishop Kinnear, with their plan and idea. He said, "No, I do not want you putting any expense in that building." He said, "That's just that imitation stone." He said, "You need a new roof, you need a new furnace and everything else, and you still have an old house." And he said, "Furthermore, it's too close to the church. I worry." He said, "If either one would catch fire, you wouldn't have a chance." He said, "You talk it over with your different church committees, put it up to the people." He said, "My idea is to rent a place that the sisters are finished in the summertime and move the furniture and everything out of St. Martha's convent to that house, rent it for a year." And he said, "Then when the sisters close at summertime, then you start immediately." And he said, "Tear that building down and put the new convent on the grounds where it is now, but move it further away from the church. Have a greater space between. He said, you have a great big lawn beside there that's no that can be moved over. So they signed the contract with the contractor, who happened to be a Catholic, and he was from Assumption Parish. And so that was the set thing to do. Well, he said to the priest that he could not promise just every time they were going to build. Well, something happened. So then they had to put it off for a year.
Wait, the contractor had to put it off?
I don't know whether it was the contractor or whether the bishop had held them to have so much mm-hmm. money before they'd break the ground. I don't know that part of the story. And because I really wasn't the superior there. I was just the head of the school itself my last year mm-hmm. up there. So I was brought home. And the sister was left
here.
There. Brought here to Bay. And the sister was left in charge. Now, I have this in writing for a reason. And half the time, they didn't know where she was. They'd get calls for the use of the hall or something like that. So they wrote and asked for someone else they could depend upon. And they got the answer that no sister of St. Joseph was interested in CCD work. So there wasn't anything else for them to do but to hire a layman. And it was a young man who took it over. I understand he did a very beautiful job, I wouldn't know. But all the women that were teaching there, they took this course, and are still, most of them are still teaching up there. And one woman, when I was up to Sister Marie Teresa's brother's funeral, I saw some woman. She came over and she said she was in charge of the center. In other words, get the teachers. Now that's, you don't pay the teachers, this is volunteer work. Get the teachers, sign the classes, whatever grade they prefer. And she's taking care of that. This is her second year doing it. They have had different ones doing it. And it is something that we had a drive for 2 weeks to get books. I forget how many $1,000 we got in cash, not promises. And we got the latest in paperbacks and everything else. And one woman who was a librarian, she marked the books that they would be classified as. And I spent time, they were delivered to the convent down in the basement, and I marked the books, put the pockets in and things like that, that she would classify them. So we lost it because of an individual sister. It's just too bad because that was something that's really going, and I don't know, or I look at it now, and tough times that some places are having keep the schools going, paying the high salaries of sectors because we don't have the religious. They're not going to be able to keep up schools much more. So it's going to be nothing more than catechetical. Someone said, well, it sounds like sour grapes in your cart, you were taken out, you want to be in charge. I said, that's not the point. Yeah. There were plenty of sisters in the community that would like to have had that role. Plenty. Sisters that weren't able to be in a classroom for 8 hours a day, 7 hours a day, whatever it would be. Would have been capable of at least sitting down and being in charge with the help of one or two and having all this lay help. Mm-hmm. And those women were definitely dedicated women. And they had put up a beautiful center, 8 large classrooms. You could sit 50 in there without any trouble. Every room. Trying the whole width of the building, which could be divided very lovely into 2 complete rooms, large. They had 2 large stoves. They had 3 refrigeration, cupboard space, and a storeroom for all your working materials. central offices besides the library.
I want to go back a number of years from that. When you were working, what is it that made you want to enter, become interested in entering?
Well, I just didn't, the marriage state didn't have any appeal to me. And I wanted your work for others. I get that from my mother. Because, as I say, my mother, I don't know how, we sat at home many times after mother passed away. How did she ever do it? Because after my father lost his limb, she had to take in roomers. We washed on the board then, and we used to pray as kids that we'd have lots of rain on Sunday, that we'd have all our rain barrels would catch the rain so we wouldn't have to go to the springs all around to get the water to wash clothes. And you had a washer which went this way. And what my father had built for a wash house, he then had it done over to make it weatherboarded, that he turned it into two rooming rooms and got four iron beds so you wouldn't have company besides the men. And my mother took care of all that, cleaning that, and the bedding and everything else. We had railroaders. Then my father was the school board. No one else wanted me. So anybody in town would have roomed and boarded a man teacher, but they didn't like to take a woman teacher. So any woman teacher roomed and boarded at our house because my father was the school board. But as I say, in those small towns, the whole situation in the world has changed. Years and years and years ago, it was families. And even large towns, you had a certain area, they were families. Any trouble, you'd see people running, families. But with the demands on families today, there's too much outside. This has been lost over the years. No criticism on people. Mm-hmm. It's something that they've been forced to. They have lost this intimacy. Even in the families, you take for instance, and this was brought home to me one time in Beechwood. This boy that was always seemed just, he was so chittery, and I called to him and brought him up. I said, what's wrong? You do have to go to the bathroom. Oh, no, sister. He said, this is the night that my dad will eat supper with him tonight. I said, what do you mean? He said, well, he's on that turn. He said, this week and next week we have supper with him, and then we don't have him again for another whole week. And I said to myself, this is a home where they're together as a family. Even though the father's missing those other 2 weeks, families today, I mean, as a general rule, now there are some, where they live a family life. Today, how many homes where the mother is forced out to work to meet expenses of keeping a home? They don't have this togetherness. This is missing. And no fault of father or mother. Now, in the country where we live, I remember how everybody down on the floor, we'd meet over by my grandfather's store, and we'd all start up at the top of the hill. As we went up the hill, we collected youngsters. Then some of the parents would go with us. They would stay on the outside. We'd go to the furthest one. The one the furthest was next to a cemetery. But there was a family way back behind it that you couldn't buy us to go back there because we had to go past the cemetery. It was scary. But we would start up there and collect stuff all the way down. And the last house they came to was our house because my father was a cripple. He couldn't go there. He couldn't walk the hill. And I remember one year, there was a Mr. Risher. He had a great big farm. And my mother always, my dad would say, now, Mr. Risher, I want the pie company. Because Margaret will put up the pumpkin for being used during the winter for pies and stuff. So this particular year, he said, I want four small ones. We have four windows in our attic, two to the, one to the back, one to the front, one to the chin of the house. Then he wanted 2, 4, 6, 8, 10 next size into the second, the clothes room and the hall, and the four bedrooms, each had two windows. Then downstairs, he wanted that many again, but bigger if they could be bigger. I can still see my father sitting in the kitchen after supper, carving the pumpkin faces. And my mother put up the pumpkin then for pies. Mm-hmm. And this particular year, we did not have one light on except in those pumpkin faces. And do you think these kids would come in our house? We carried candy to school for a week to get rid of the candy.
They wouldn't come?
They were afraid because there wasn't any light except in the pumpkins. And, of course, it was only years later that we realized how sad my dad was. He thought he was doing something mm-hmm. to make the kids happy. And we carried candy to school for almost a week to get rid of it. Because my mother made candy every day for a long time. Oh, yes, the kids had their bags to buy and get the candy and stuff. And because my father was a cripple, he couldn't go out. And that's why the families did it themselves. They decided they'd go to the Gano Hunt family last. Mm-hmm. They have all the kids with them. And the same thing when it was ice skating. A lot of the mothers, my mother always went down to the river. Kids went down and build the fire on the shore. My father would be at home. My sister said, home with him. She was always old maid. I'd get down. I remember I got on a pair of skates, but I stood up and I sat down. I was afraid to go out on the ice. But there is this, I mean, as I say, we older people can sit down and think of how family life was at that time. In the old days, a man worked 12 hours a day and 12 hours a night, but he had his changes of shifts that he spent some time with his family. Now, it's so often that they're not with their family. To me, it's a family breakdown. It's very difficult to keep it. And then today, you didn't have all these sports that the youth have today to take them out of their house. They had baseball, period. It's about the end of what they had. I remember my father, when we lived in the country, he always loved to fish, and he loved baseball. Of course, he couldn't play baseball. And the men would say, "All right, Charlie, we're going gigging tonight. You want to go?" He'd say, "Yes." Well, they'd help him down the lane to the riverbank, because it was dirt. Get him into the boat, and he'd say, "Well, we'll be going up the river about 8:30, and we'd be up at the bedroom window, and we'd see the boat going. My mother would take the candle and wave it, mm-hmm. let him know we were watching out the window." Mm-hmm. And I remember one time when he came home with whatever he had, he'd take one of the big dish pans and put it on the table in the pantry where we washed dishes. We had two big pans. One for washing, one for putting them in to drink. And I went down. I wakened up, and I knew he'd been out gigging. I went down to see what he had. And I had to get on my tiptoes and look into this big dish pan that he had, his kitchen. And heavens above, the frog he'd gotten from. And a frog had gotten up, and it was down on the floor under the table where the pans were. And that frog jumped on my foot. I screamed. Well, my mother down the steps, because Dad didn't have his artificial convention. "What are you doing down here? You're not supposed to be down here." She said, What happened? Why'd you scream?" I said, "That crazy thing jumped on my foot." So I wasn't allowed any frog.
You ate the frog?
Frog legs.
Frog legs.
But that was his only thing that he... His enjoyment after he lost his life.
Mm-hmm. You're talking about families, and we were talking this morning about how the families you're working with right now. We wondered if you'd like to talk a little bit about the Cambodian families here.
Well, the Cambodian family, really. You don't understand too much of what they're saying. You know what I mean? It's hard for them to express themselves. But from the day they walked in here, thank you. From the day they walked in, sisters, thank you. Then later, thank you, sister. And now they can give you maybe a whole sentence.
Their emotions at first, weren't they?
Yes.
And they activate that.
Very much so. And are they, their consideration for each other. Those little boys will look out for the younger ones. And they'll look and see what somebody else at the table needs when they're finished eating. They'll go up there, and I thought I was the only one hung cups on my fingers until I saw them hanging the cups on their fingers to take back up to the table, to reset the table. Now, they don't always get everything back on the table. First of all, we don't always have the things washed to put back. And thank you. Thank you very much now. And even B12. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Better say who B12 is, so we
And then the little girl, that last girl we got now. Thank you.
Bye. B12.
Well, that's the size of a rifle or something like that. Buzz, buzz, bang, bang, bang around.
Maybe something to do with the vitamins.
No, maybe so. I don't know. But,
it's full of caffeine. Mm-hmm.
About how old is he?
I don't know what he is. Three or four.
I think three. Mm-hmm.
And there's a little one that his mother's in my class. What was I handed him the other day? Thank you very much. And he grins. And some days he's, you know, he's not feeling too good. But, you know, sister, to come into a big building like this and see so many people and knowing what they came through, that one family we have, I don't know whether it's B12's family or not, but I think it is, but I could be wrong. But however, this is what happened. On their way out, they were stripped to the skin.
Out of Thailand? I mean, of Cambodia?
I think. And to see if they had something hidden under the skin. When you realize what these people, and if they hadn't gotten out of Afghanistan, they were going to be sent back in Cambodia. Can't you imagine what would go on with them if they went back into Cambodia?
They
would have been killed.
They went through Afghanistan.
I think that's where they came out of, isn't it?
I don't know for sure, sister. I thought it was border there, Thailand and Cambodia.
I could be wrong. I mean, I just heard this. I didn't hear it from the man, but I didn't hear it from the man.
You're working with them, though. Do they mention it already about their
No, I keep away from them. Mm-hmm. Keep away from the person.
What is your work like with them?
Pardon me?
What is it that your work is with them?
Just taking whatever comes to my mind, sister. They don't know any English at all. And right now I'm trying to put prices of things and names of articles that they will be buying in that. Because they have to start learning when they get out of here, going out shopping with the people who are sponsoring them, because they're going to have to be on their own sooner or later. Now, the one family left here, the man had started the job the day he moved from here. People in this weekly had a job for him. I don't know what a job is. But he's working. And the home they have there in Seville is really beautiful. It's one of those small places up there. They can walk to that Quaker Valley shopping area from their place. But when you go in, you go around a round circle like this. And they have a little dining that, and off of that a small almost like a pantry, but that's where the dish, the sink is and the cupboard. And then they have a little sitting room there. Then you go up a pair of stairs. It's a half of a double house is where they are now. I would surmise then upstairs they would have maybe two bedrooms and a bathroom. I didn't go upstairs. And but very, very, very beautiful. They have a telephone. They had a TV. And hanging down right inside the window. The window's about half of that length. Is a hanging, beautiful green plant hanging. But when we went in, guess what? The first thing that came out was cups and saucers, hot tea.
Oh, they were serving you? Did you go when they went initially, or did you go after?
No, we went after Sunday.